Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, mostly on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective.
That is fairly straightforward. The inbound shipping thing can be dealt with pretty straightforwardly now, even though Amazon's being nasty about it, shall we say, politely. Tell us about customer returns, because I can imagine that once you include the customer, who's also a capricious beast, in the mix, that it starts to get more complex.
Mm-hmm. So this one is, you know, the main thing is customers just not returning the products within the window frame, or, you know, not at all. They just don't even return the product at all. The hard part with this is the hard part that all reimbursement services have is this is one really big issue, is because a lot of sellers will, what Amazon calls a seller-initiated reimbursement, where for FBA policy, Amazon is the one who is supposed to be handling all of the customer return process. But a customer will contact the seller directly and say, hey, I want a reimbursement for this product. And then the seller will say, the correct way should be directing them to Amazon customer support, and the Amazon agent will be the one who issues them the reimbursement. But a lot of times sellers who just want to take care of the problem and, you know, provide a better customer experience is just say, I will refund you right now. And they will go in and click the refund order. The problem is if that customer does not return the product, Amazon will know that the seller was the one who provided the reimbursement. And Amazon will say, you went outside of FBA policy. You do not get reimbursed for this. It also is possible that the seller just tells the customer, here's your refund and don't worry about returning the product. The problem is that we see on the software side of the reports, you know, we download these reports and we're looking at the reports. You know, we don't necessarily see this communication that's going on between the seller and the buyer. And we just think that it's, you know, this customer maliciously did not return the product when that isn't the case at all. This is a bit trickier situation. But this one, we usually just go off of seller behavior. So if we kind of see this seller initiating behavior happen regularly, then we realize this is just this, you know, we just kind of stop filing. We stop kind of looking for this opportunity for the seller because we realize that the seller is a bit more apt to kind of sidestep the policy to provide a better customer experience.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, I think it's worth addressing this because the most important thing, I think, for most sellers is to avoid negative reviews, because even if you spend quite a large amount of money and you avoid one negative review, let's say you have, it's a newish product you've launched recently, or it's in a small marketplace where there aren't just isn't much volume. If you have 50 reviews and you get one or two one-star reviews, that could suddenly pull your average down half a star. And my experience, as we all know, that normally pulls the conversion rates in half, which is just horrendous financially. Right. So it's probably worth, even for a modest SKU, several hundred dollars to avoid one negative review. And for something that's doing really well but doesn't have that many reviews, but there's a lot of sales volume at stake, it's probably worth thousands. So that is one of those things that people do, and there's a very legitimate business reason. But I think what you're implying is it's probably a good idea to make it a policy and formalize it and then communicate that to people like yourselves so that everybody knows where they stand. So look, our policy is we never ask anyone to return any item unless its value is over X dollars, $30, say $50 or something. I mean, I certainly, if I had a $5 widget that I was selling for $20, I never wanted them to return it because I don't want it to be going back into the system and a defective product be potentially sent to a customer. So very definitely did not want it in the system, which is a different reason again, right? So I think as long as one has a clear policy about that, and it's a policy rather than just something you kind of do but isn't clear, then communicate with people like yourself. So just something to reflect on there. Because there are very legitimate reasons for doing it. Equally, I know some people who don't, and that's fair enough if you've got expensive products as well. Yeah. Okay. So that's one issue that makes sense that you've got to be clear about. So what happens then if we're not in that situation? What's the way forward to find out about getting money back out of Amazon that they owe us?
So this one is, again, the concept of it is very straightforward. You look at your refund report and you look at your customer return report, and you just line up the two. You will just see every single order that was refunded, and then you just check if those orders were in fact actually returned.
So what were those reports again? Sorry, it's the refund report and the
customer return report.
Customer return report. Okay.
So the refund one you get from the payments tab in your Seller Central. There's a report and then there's payments. And in there in the transaction view, you can find this. You can sort all the refunded orders. And then you cross-reference that with the customer return report, which is the report that gets generated whenever an item goes back to the returns warehouse. So I think in the US, like the Las Vegas and I think in Kentucky. So there are two warehouses that are specifically for customer returns. I think Las Vegas, for the US market, I think Las Vegas is the West Coast and Kentucky is East Coast. So if you check your customer return reports, every single customer return is being returned to Las Vegas or Kentucky. There might be a Miami in there on occasion. But these are customer return processing warehouses. After they get processed, they will then get redistributed back out to the normal warehouses, depending on if it's sellable, if it's unsellable, whatnot. So it's at the initial facility that Amazon is determining what is the condition of the product. And then, for example, so let's say a customer returns a product that's it's still sellable. So Amazon then needs to actually send this product back to, Ontario 8, which is down in Southern California. So now they have to send this product from Las Vegas to Southern California. You then have to check a second report to verify that the item checked into Ontario 8. And that doesn't always happen.
Right. Which report is that one then?
That's the inventory event report. So, just because you check the customer return report doesn't mean it's actually going back into your inventory. And the same goes also for unsellable products. You do have unsellable products that Amazon says, I'm going to return to your inventory, that they don't. For some reason or another, it doesn't actually appear in your unsellable inventory. A lot of people will ask me, can we ask for reimbursement for customer damaged products? And I say no, but if Amazon loses that customer damaged product, you can ask for reimbursement. So, okay. And that actually happens not very often, but it happens often enough.
Okay. So the customer damaged product, this is another simple golden nugget, is that customer damaged products will not get reimbursement from Amazon. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. So in theory, you could chase the customer up and ask them for money back. And that will be really fun when they leave a one-star review, I guess. But yeah, I guess that's the only way to get the money back, right? Or just accept that it's cost of doing business.
Yeah, exactly. It's the cost of doing FBA business.
FBA business. Right. Fair enough, yeah. Okay, well, that's worth knowing. So, I mean, at least we're not going to spend, a lot of time and energy training up a VA to go and bang their head against a brick wall there. So if a customer's damaged your stuff, it's tough luck. And I guess, to be fair, I mean, Amazon's created this very, very customer-centric business model. That's why they get people signing up for it. That's why they get incredible conversion rates. And the downside of that is that they act like spoiled children. So I suppose you're going to have to take both sides of that equation. Yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so that's the DIY on that stuff. So there's obviously a lot of detail that goes into any given one of these issues with the reports you've got to check and double check and cross check and allow for nuances. The seller has a tendency to reimburse people themselves and things like that. Right. So how do you guys deal with, or how can anyone who's trying to do it, deal with that mixture of detail, but also the volume, because the volume of transactions, even with a relatively modest number of SKUs, presumably ends up pretty, pretty damn high, because you've got one transaction, presumably by the sound of it, can end up in about 6 or 7 reports. What's the solution for kind of the mix of detail and volume that you've got to deal with in this situation?
As a seller?
Yeah, well, let's talk about that as a seller first, and then we'll talk about how you guys handle it as well.
So as a seller, I would just say, if you are savvy enough with Microsoft Excel, you can create an infrastructure of formulas and cross-referencing things that if you basically build out an infrastructure, you could download these reports and just copy them into an Excel workbook that you already have these pre-made formulas. You can essentially speed up the work yourself. And, you know, and whether you have one SKU or 100 SKUs, it's doing the same process of finding these discrepancies for you. If you're not good with this, good luck. You know, there, because it's once you reach a certain a number of volume, it's, I would just say, it's no possible way to, without the assistance of software, there's humanly, there's no way that you can do this to stay on top of it.
Okay, you know, so sooner or later you're going to need software then, basically.
Exactly.
Okay, which is where you guys come in, I guess.
So, exactly.
So is what SalesZoom offers, it's a very important question, actually, I should address this. Is it something that is purely software that the users would interface with directly? Or, you know, you've implied that there's a bit of human judgment going on. So do you have sort of account managers that deal with it as well?
Correct. So our software is downloading all the reports. And so, for example, in the case of the customer returns that, you know, if we're having a consistent fail rate with these tickets, you know, this can trigger a flag for an account manager to reach out to the seller and say, you know, we noticed that this type is failing more often than not. Is this your kind of company policy? And working with the seller that way and figuring out if they have certain tendencies to do ways. I've personally worked with some sellers where, so some sellers say, give me a list of 200 orders that haven't been returned and I will sort through and tell you which ones I initiated the refund myself, which we were like, well, if you want to do the footwork, you know,
yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
So, but the seller took a week and he sat down, he went through 200 orders and he just checked yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And he gave the document back to us. And then, it worked from there. Well, we do have some other sellers who just say, no, I don't want to do the footwork. And so sometimes we'll have account managers just spend 2 hours on your Saturday and go through and make sure you kind of go through their account and make sure we don't file any bad tickets for them. There's always exceptions where we do have a more human heavy interaction with everything to make sure we do things correctly.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So you got a nice blend of sort of human machine interface there. And so right. Makes a lot of sense. So talking about that, on the other side of the equation in Amazon, obviously they have very sort of rigid, sometimes not one thinks particularly well architected computer systems, but there they go. Right. And then definitely very variable human element in the sense of probably very badly trained employees, or they certainly uh-huh. cross that way. So how do you deal with that sort of variability in the Amazon system?
As far as the agents answering?
The agents, yeah.
Oh, and if you sell in the European marketplaces, good luck, because I have discovered the Amazon agents who do support in EU are horribly trained. You send them stuff where you say, hey, you know, there are 10 items that were damaged. And they reply back, oh, we didn't find any lost items. What are you talking about? And you're right. Like, my email very clearly says damaged. Yeah. There's no room for a misunderstanding here. This has come from going through thousands of messages for me personally, because I was brought in to SalesZoom about a year ago to kind of, they had a basic structure of the product, but it was to really, hey, you know, we need to make sure that this is streamlined and everything is within policy and we're doing things correctly. And so to figure out how to best go through this, you know, circus of Amazon ticket filing was to just simply go through hundreds and thousands of messages with different agents and basically figure out these scenarios are whenever we have bad agents. These scenarios are agents who just, they're not being, you know, because you do get some agents who are just being very lazy and just say, I'm closing this ticket. You do have some that, so in the case of, so going back to the customer return report, an item gets checked in and then Amazon says, I'm going to return it to your inventory. You then have to check the inventory event report and line these up. A lot of Amazon agents don't actually know about that. they just see the customer return report and they say, oh, it says it was returned. You know, and we have to reply back, we're not saying it wasn't returned. We're saying it wasn't returned to the warehouse that it's supposed to. You know, it was checked into Vegas, but it didn't check into Ontario. You know, and so that a lot of times the agents say, oh, okay, now I see what you're saying. And so this is a case of just the Amazon agents are not well trained to understand what is actually going on. And that's the frustrating part. You try to, you know, we even specifically formulate in our messages, we know it was checked in, but we don't see it in the inventory environment, but you still get these Amazon agents who don't read the messages.
So you basically need somebody at the side, the seller side, or what you guys do, who understands the possible missing information, the things that the agents are missing that they should be knowing but don't, and kind of gently, politely point that out to them, say, okay, I understand that it's in the customer report. What we didn't see is in XYZ report, this event, event A, and then you can actually spell it out to them. And at that point, exactly, then they can do their job.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah. So there is an art in all these different areas, and like in suspension, you know, which is a deeply unpleasant area, obviously, for a lot of us. But,
oh, yeah,
you know, there is an art to reading between the lines. But, and then sometimes this is not about reading between the lines. It's the opposite. It's like the agents didn't know the lines were there to be read. That's not really a metaphor, but you know what I mean. Yeah, okay. So you guys obviously got a massive handle on all this stuff. I mean, I have to say, as I said before, there are many areas where it's lovely when an expert comes on and talks about the area they do and then gently mentions their service at the end. You might possibly want to do it, but most people will do it themselves. This feels very much like an area that a lot of people will want to outsource, particularly if there's no monthly minimum, which is, sounds very powerful. So tell us a little bit more about, if people want to go ahead and use your service, how they do that.
So there is the onboarding process, which we get API access to your account. So it's through the your Seller Central API access is how we download all of these reports. The one very frustrating part is, which I have learned, is Amazon's information in Amazon's API is not always the same information that you see on Seller Central, which is a hugely frustrating thing. Because sometimes the information that we get in the API doesn't actually line up with the Seller Central information. And Amazon, they say, oh, yeah, the report you're looking at doesn't have all the information. You're kind of like, come on, guys. Like, you know, you're a multi-billion dollar company. Surely you can, you know, have this stuff line up. But yeah, we integrate in with your Seller Central. We will get access to all the different reports. So we will handle the case creation, the case follow-up. And then on Refund Hunter, we have to give you a special link for you. We can give folks a special promotion after you get this aired out, that they can get a discount on, I think it will be, we've always changed it for different events. Sometimes it's like a $15 credit. Sometimes it's a $50 credit. We'll have to figure out. But,
all right. Well, we'll put that in the show notes. So
it'll take people straight to the sign up page.
It's, yeah. If people want to access that, I would just go to amazingfba.com/saleszoom, SalesZoom. Or Z. Yeah. So that's fine. We'll figure that out. But certainly you'll be able to do some kind of deal for the listeners. And that makes sense. So how do you charge? Because we didn't ask about that. I mean, okay, there's no minimum charge. Do you take a percentage of refunds that you get?
Correct. So we take 25% of whatever we get reimbursed back. So how we line it up is we line up any reimbursement that was given due to our ticket. So in the reimbursement report, you have your reimbursement ID column, and then you have a case ID column. So typically it would be our ticket 123 that initiated this reimbursement. It will be in the reimbursement report. The seller gets, you know, his money deposited into his regular Amazon account, that whatever bank account or credit card he has linked to his selling store. And then a couple weeks later, we will invoice the seller with a detailed invoice of every reimbursement ID along with the case ID that we created for them.
That makes sense. So basically you're going to do it by invoice rather than taking it off them straight up front. But yeah, 25%. Okay, it's a healthy percentage. But I guess the question is whether people would have actually got that reimbursement or not, I suppose.
Right.
It depends how you look at it. And you've got to figure this stuff out for yourself, obviously. I mean, you know, if you're good with pivot tables, as you say, and you can set up with VAs, sure, you can do it in-house. On the other hand, if your money's sitting there and you're not actually going to get round to getting it reimbursed at all because you're just too damn busy, then I guess it makes a lot of sense to outsource it and say, you know what, you handle this, and you can get a healthy fee and we'll take the money that was never going to be there anyway. So yeah, interesting. Yeah. So it depends on people's situation sort of to make a judgment on that. But yeah. Okay. Interesting. So that's how people go for that if they want to go for it. So we'll set up a link, as I said, amazingfba.com/saleszoom for this interview, which will also have any links if people want to sign up for that and go ahead. Mm-hmm. Any other things people would need to know to use SalesZoom's actual service?
I guess going back to your point, you know, sometimes people do like to have VAs. You know, we have come across quite a few customers who say, you know, they currently have VAs do this. And I always tell them, you know, you can sign up and let us know to not file tickets for you. And then we can show you a potential earning of what we think is there. So we had a seller a couple months ago. He's like, oh, no, yeah, I have a VA take care of this for me. I said, all right. I said, well, sign up. We won't file tickets for you, but just take a look at your potential earning. I think it still came out to like $3,000. So I was like, despite having a VA, there are these other situations that for some, you know, we're not going to get 100% of that, but it's, you know, we'll get a healthy chunk of that back. And so there's nothing wrong with, I even have told some people, you know, you can have your VAs look for the damage and lost situations. We'll turn that fee, you know, we'll turn those ticket types off for you. And we're just going to worry about these other kind of niche areas that are harder to find.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, good. Yeah. Well, that's very sensible to hear. So in other words, you can just, you know, your service for a big seller, I mean, 25% could be potentially a lot of money. But on the other hand, if they weren't going to get it back anyway, because it's just too specialist, or the amount of manpower that I would actually, even with a big number of, if you got across a lot of SKUs, the manpower might still be in-house, just too expensive to make it viable. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you can really pick and pack, you can sort of mix and match.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, makes a lot of sense. Yeah, good. Okay, so there's lots of different ways that people can explore working with you or actually work with you rather than just taking one sort of big package. That's very worth knowing.
Correct.
We discussed this about this podcast quite a while ago. I hear rumors that you've got a PPC optimization software that is also going to become available.
Yes.
How are things going with that?
That is still in the works.
So basically, Ben, thank you for taking us through this whole journey with the reimbursements and refunds and so forth. It does sound like a very, very complex area. I mean, I knew it was bound to be complex. I didn't personally know that many reports were involved because I'm not really, I suppose I've trusted Amazon to refund me when I thought it was supposed to. As I said, I'm at the beginning of the show that I've got a friend who is a British based, but sells in the US almost exclusively. I think he's probably expanded to Europe by now, but after one Q4, he was owed something like $120,000 by Amazon. Yeah. So it really is not a small sort of side issue. It's actually for a big seller, a very, very, very big source of cash, let's put it positively, if you get it back. So incredibly worth handling. And you've given us some great ideas of doing it DIY. Also, you guys are obviously very expert in this area. So worth checking out your services. You said you can mix and match and sort of pick off the things that you want to do or, you know, quite customizable service, which is really nice. I mean, I guess that's why having a human element as well as just being software is, you know, is a nice mix for the sellers who are using it. So that's great stuff. Any parting words that you would like to give us to minimize refunds or to speed up or make easier the process of getting the money back from Amazon?
Number one, the easiest, again, going back to that inbound situation, is keep your paperwork, have it organized. This is something that you can do yourself, I would say, is the easiest way. Other than that, I definitely encourage folks to try the inventory reconciliation process yourself. Download these reports, see what's going on, become familiar, file a couple tickets yourself. And then once you get big enough, you know, give us a try and we'll kind of handle everything for you from there.
Makes total sense. Great. Well, not much else to say except it's just get in there and get your money back out of Amazon, folks, really, isn't it? Because it's just easy to assume, because of the complexity, the lazy, easy route is to assume they're doing what they should do. And actually, if that's resulting in thousands or tens or even hundreds of thousands of dollars of your money in their pockets, worth making the effort, folks. So, Ben, thank you so much for coming on to share your expertise on this area.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Michael. It was a great getting to talk and share some knowledge.
Yeah, great to hear the detail from the horse's mouth. So thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for Kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.